Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Hello and welcome to the 101 podcast. If you're enjoying the show, consider signing up for the Patreon. There you get ad-free content, early access, exclusive episodes, and monthly supporter hangouts. You can find it at patreon.com/the101podcast. If you don't like the subscription-based models, there are other ways of supporting the show that are linked in the description. Thank you for tuning in and enjoy this episode.
They said it was forbidden. They said it was dangerous. They were right. Introducing the paranoid American homunculus owner's manual. Dive into the arcane, into the hidden corners of the occult. This isn't just a comic. It's a hidden tome of supernatural power. All original artwork illustrating the groundbreaking research of Juan Ayala, one of the only living homunculologists of our time. Learn how to summon your own homunculus, an enigma wrapped in the fabric of reality itself, their power at your fingertips, their existence your secret. Explore the mysteries of the Aristotelian, the spiritual, the Paracelsian, the Crowleyan homunculus, ancient knowledge lost to time, now unearthed in this forbidden tale. This comic book holds truths not meant for the light of day, knowledge that was buried, feared, and shunned. Are you ready to uncover the hidden, the paranoid American homunculus owner's manual, not for the faint of heart? Available now from Paranoid American. Get your copy at tjojp.com or paranoidamerican.com today.
Welcome to the One-on-One Podcast with your host, Juan Ayala.
Well, the point is experience. We want to reach higher states of consciousness, essentially, is what the aim is. We want to not so much bring back these sort of things. I think the Typhonian Order is quite opposed to invasive forces coming from that realm, entering dayside consciousness, and we really want to try to fight that as much as possible. I know, I think at least in one of Bertio's orders, they talk about trying to fight cosmic or otherworldly, like, evils or negative forces that are trying to invade and dayside consciousness as people going crazy or people murdering people, you know, like, what are these people thinking? This could be parasites from this other universe that's invading in our dayside reality and causing them to do this thing. I'm not trying to take blame away from people.
Welcome back to another episode of the 101 Podcast. I'm your host, as always. Make sure to follow the show on social media at the 101 Podcast, tjojp.com, patreon.com/the101podcast, all that good stuff. If you're on YouTube, if you're on Rumble, if you're on wherever, thumbs up, leave a review, all that good stuff. Call in 407-476-4606. Also, pick up some shirts, links down in the description. The shirts are over at toplobsta.com. I've had a few people ask me about those, so check those out. What else do we got? Yeah, follow me on Twitch. I'm trying to stream every Wednesday, so make sure to Follow me on there and on the backup Juan on Juan Media YouTube channel and all that good stuff. Today we have Arthur Magnus with us. What's up, dude?
What's up?
How you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good.
So
running a lot of.
You have anything you want to plug, bro?
Not really. I did an article for Lon the Way, a Psychonauts workbook. People want to look that up. I think you and I are going to talk about the other article I've written too on Lon.
Yeah, so you hit me up. How many people hit me up? And usually some people hit me up, tell me how much of a dickhead I am. Other people hit me up, enjoy the show, and they offer insight. You know, you got those two spectrums in there. And you hit me up with some interesting stuff in regards to, I think it was from the Michael Staley interview, wasn't it? That you had contacted me about as far as the Typhonian OTO. I think that's episode, what episode number is that? Let's look that up real quick so people can check that out. I'll link it down to in the description. But Michael Staley, who's the head of the Typhonian OTO.
Yeah.
Episode 183. That was back in October.
Yeah. Yeah, see, I had seen that one, and one you have done previously. I think it was you and another podcaster, and you guys were just kind of generally going over the tunnels of Set and talking about Lom and stuff. And I thought that was pretty neat. I think I put a comment in the comment section there about that one too. But when I saw Staley on here, I thought, you know, I'd hit you up and go over some stuff from like a more practical standpoint. Not saying that he isn't a active practitioner, he is, but you know, I'm kind of new to this, so I have more of like a, you know, on planet Earth sort of perspective. Some mm-hmm. as far as some of these other guys that are like really out there now.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about you, Arthur, and I mean, what you can't reveal, whatever it is, but what got you started into this whole esoteric realm side of things? Was it the promise of esoteric knowledge to control reality? Like, what was it for you that made your esoteric nipples hard?
Well, so it's actually a little bit more simple than that. I mean, straight out of high school, I mean, I had dabbled in like, you know, alchemy. It was kind of interesting then, but straight out of high school, it was just basic, you know, silly teen rebellion type stuff. Got into Levian Satanism, you know, was just trying to carve out my own path. I didn't really like it that much. It was just kind of just basic hedonism. At least that's the way I saw it then. Got a little bit more of a respect for it nowadays, but for the most part, it just wasn't for me. But I had read somewhere that I couldn't tell you which article, but it was LaVey had gone to, I guess, Seattle or somewhere around there and had met some Thelemites. And I was like, what the hell is a Thelemite? And so, of course, I found Aleister Crowley and all that stuff, started researching, you know, all of his Liebers and whatever. And started to find out about Kabbalah and all the things that he was, you know, on. And one thing led to another, and I found like a small study group in Maryville, and I started meeting up with those cats. And then we would drive to Atlanta. There's a body that was there and that is still there today, called Dove and Serpent, and out in Georgia. And
said Maryville, is that where I was at?
Yeah, yeah. So that's where a friend of mine was staying at the time. He's not there anymore, but they had just a small collective. You know, we'd go over, read Crowley's Liber Abba, you know, book 4, going over all the, you know, different things he was talking about, and basically just trying to learn this stuff and get ourselves prepped up for initiation. They had turned me onto the OTO. I didn't even know if it was still running or what was going on with it. You know, to me, it was just kind of like, I knew it was my spiritual path that I was going to follow. But they put me into contact with these folks, and, you know, finally started to figure out that I could actually go to these places and go to mass and get initiated and all this stuff. which I didn't know that was an option at the time. And I got initiated to the Minerval degree in 2011. So I've been in the OTO actively for a little over a decade. And
so you're deep into this sort of stuff then, huh? I mean, you even have it tattooed on your arm, bro. That's hardcore.
Yeah, this is my first tattoo, actually. It was a friend of mine named Chris Berwicks did this, my first tattoo. He was in the OTO as well. He ended up passing away not too long ago. But
so the secret societies, and it's an interesting concept because, you know, being one that researches the occult, and but I don't partake in it. I do get called out all the time for being an armchair occultist because, you know, I'm fine with that. Being an armchair occultist doesn't bother me at all, but it's comfortable, right? Because but essentially it's about the manipulation of energy, right? Because when you're doing a ritual, you're essentially trying to manipulate energy to bend it to your will. Or how would you does the OTO work with Goetia, or is that a whole different system? Because I know Goetia with Crowley was more of like, this is yourself, these are different aspects of your psyche and different parts of your subconscious, I guess, that you're able to manipulate. What are your thoughts on that, since you've been in that, and I'm guessing you've done rituals as well?
Yeah, I've done everything under the sun. As far as the OTO goes, they do two things. They do initiations and they do mass, and they facilitate open discussions on everything under the sun. You can talk about whatever you want to. You can hold a class at a certain local OTO body, like we have one here in Nashville, Gnarled Oak. But what the OTO does is essentially not unlike what the Masons do. You're put through initiations that teach you a certain thing, right? And it's all just about how to be a better person, essentially, at the end of the day. It's not really like as mystical as it may sound. The Goetia is its own thing. It does have to do with demons, but the way I've kind of like looked at it is with the new research with Jake Stratton Kent and elaborations on the PGM, the Greek magical papyri. Goetia is a term that basically means howling, and it comes from the Greek terminology, where they would essentially have these people that would cry at funerals. It's an older tradition than the medieval Goetia that we all kind of know and love, you know, with the, you know, 72 demons or however many there are. It's basically its own thing. But getting back to like what is the intent of doing ritual, it really just depends on what you're wanting to get out of it. And a lot of I feel like a lot of magicians get trapped in this like put in to get something back sort of mentality, where everything that they do magical wise is to get something, to bring something to themselves. And I think it's perpetuated because on a lot of these old grimoires that you read, it's like to get gold or to win a horse race or to get a judge to favor your ruling or whatever. And a lot of people get trapped in that mentality, when magic is just the way I do it is, I mean, it's not to say that I don't do magic to get things. I have done it and I will continue to do it, but, you know, I can't help but do magic. And that was the point of what Crowley was talking about, is that you're going to do magic. You might as well do it well. That's why he said you need to learn all of these things in order to do it. And, yes, you're manipulating energy. The way I see it now, like Michael Staley, I do consider myself Advaitist. And with that, when we look at the material world, you know, it's essentially not real. All of this is an illusion. It's no different than the dream world or the sleep world, whatever you want to call it, the three worlds or whatever. In Tantra, you know, the wake world, the sleep world, and the deep sleep. And Crowley taught this as well about dualism, about how all these things, you know, everything that's two is an illusion. Everything that's separate from the one is an illusion. And essentially what we're doing is you're counterbalancing everything by its opposite in order to create a third thing. So we work with magic under the guise that the thing that we want is separate from us. Well, how do we bridge that connection? And essentially that's where ritual kind of takes you from there to there.
So like another form of manifestation, essentially, where you're able to attract it and bring it forth. And you're in Tennessee, and that was one of the things that the Goetia meaning howling, because I think I either saw that in, I read that in Grant referring to Crowley. It was a footnote in Grant's work. I think it was the Night Side of Eden book. I think that was the book where he referred to it. It was a footnote. And it's interesting because in your area, there's a lot of dogman sightings, right? Like it's like a hot spot for dogman. Do you know anything about the dogman in your area? Because it's like Tennessee's hot for that right now, bro.
I do not. No, I'll keep an eye out for him.
Well, so like, because this is something that I've always thought about like some of these cryptids, if maybe perhaps it is like some vessel that you're able to project your consciousness into, because that's part of the werewolf lore, where they have these, I guess, invisible werewolf mech suits or something sitting in a different layer of reality. And then when the occultist projects his consciousness into it, he's able to then take off with that body and do whatever he does. And usually it's after making a deal with a mysterious figure, you know, a hat man type of entity, that again, the Faustian bargain, where it's like, hey, what are you willing to give up? It's like, well, here's your soul. It's almost like Skyrim. I think in Skyrim there's a whole quest line of becoming a werewolf, and you have to do whatever the people tell you to do, and then you become one after the fact. But yeah, I just found it interesting that Goetia equals howling, and then you have the whole dogman sightings in your area. I don't know if you knew anything about it, but yeah, keep an eye out, bro, because it's real hot there right now.
It's probably some other sorcerer who's doing atavistic resurgence. He's tapping into pre-existent consciousness and becoming an animal that he once was. And then, because that's the whole thing with, especially going into Berdio's meontology. I don't know if you know anything about that.
So, real quick, you mentioned two. You mentioned one guy, Jack Stratton. What was the guy's? The first guy you mentioned,
Jake Stratton Kent.
Jake Stratton.
Yeah, Kent. Hash Kent. Yeah.
And then who's this guy that you just mentioned?
Michael Berdio.
How do you spell his last name?
Bertiaux.
So tell me about this guy. So you're touching on some stuff that's really interesting. Would you say that he's reverting? So the whole Typhonian thing and transversing the abysses is about going back to a preternatural or antediluvian state of human consciousness. And some people lose their minds in the process. And that's where you get the magical lycanthrope that, again, this is according to Grant. And you're saying that you know some people who do this sort of stuff?
I'm looking into it myself. I don't know anybody personally that does it. I probably do. I just don't know that they do it. You know what I mean? Because I know a few Typhonian people. I know a few people who work with Berdio. I know a lot of people who work with Nima. I know that Grant touches on lycanthropy and atavistic resurgence, especially because that was kind of Austin Spare's whole deal was kind of tapping into this kind of animalistic, you know, pre-existence or future existence, if you want to go Nima's route, you know, because of the whole Aeon thing. Michael Berdio is more into the Voodoo Gnostic. He's based in Chicago, I think, still. Grant goes into a deep dive with Michael Berdio in Cults of the Shadow, Night Side of Eden, Outside the Circle of Time, probably in the last three trilogies as well. But essentially what's happening is, and this is where things are going to get kind of get thin because my knowledge of Berdio is kind of limited right now. I haven't really gotten into his work. I have all his work, but I haven't got to them yet. I'm still kind of...
Welcome to the club, bro. I mean, I haven't read all of Grant's work either. It's just so dense, you know.
Yeah, I've read all of Grant's stuff. Of course, I couldn't quote it verbatim. I have a high school education, but I'm going through a lot of Tantra books right now. So a lot of my stuff is like in the realm of... researching where Grant was coming from as far as his Advaita Vedanta background, his tantric background, because a lot of his stuff, he knew more about Tantra than what Theodore Royce and Crowley were messing with when they started the OTO. So he had a more of a solid understanding of what those elements were. So I'm trying to research that at the moment and then go forward. And because I think the Michael Berdio stuff is what comes after Grant. I think it's basically the next step of that evolution of Trans-Yugothian contact of different entities and different universes, et cetera, et cetera. And getting into his me ontology, which the ontology of the meon, which he considers, I think beyond universe B. I think he goes into how some people that think they're going into the tunnels of Set are actually like touching on the front side of the tree of life, but in an astral way. So it's not exactly going into the universe B, and it's like by means of atavistic resurgence are they able to actually go into universe B where existence is non-existence.
What's that atavistic resurgence? What's that?
So an atavistic resurgence is what I was talking about, going back into these pre-existent like consciousness forms of consciousness where you're kind of reverting back to an animalistic nature. You're like a non-human variety, and by doing that you're essentially leaving the vessel of the mind body complex, right, which is the front side of the tree. And then you're by doing that you've essentially gained access to the other side.
Yeah. Yeah, and do you guys bring a watcher to watch your body while you're out there in the astral realm?
I haven't done anything like that yet. The way I approach Universe B is essentially just through Lom at this point. I know people who have moved on from the image of Lom, as enigmatic as it is. They use their own artwork. I have two paintings of Lom that I've done. I think I have one right over on the wall.
Is that the one that you sent me a picture of?
It might be. Is it the one with the Kundalini?
Yeah.
And so all the stuff.
Before we go there, because I find all that super interesting. This dude over here, Michael Paul, you said Berdio is how you say his last name? Berdio.
I say Berdio.
Berdio. The dude's 89. I mean, he's still around, but he's 89. And yeah, so the Vodun Gnostic Workbook, a 1615-page compendium. I have to check that out.
You really want to blow your mind, read that book. It's out there.
So this guy, Voodoo, right? Vodun is all about invoking. You know, there's a difference between invocation and evocation, and they're all about bringing in the entity, right, and using their body as a vessel. So it would make sense that you're saying that this guy could potentially know about this whole reverting, because I've talked about this before. But I didn't know that there was an actual line of like thinking or research in regards to. I've said that because according to Grant in the Tunnels of Set, there are failed magical experiments essentially in these tunnels, and that sometimes, and these are failed. So occultists are trapped in these tunnels after failing to traverse. And there, those things that are in there are also results of their failed magical attempts, and that sometimes these things can come through from that universe to this universe. And that's, again, eerily similar to the whole Stranger Things show where it's literally the portal is on a tree and the stuff comes from the tree, which is, in my opinion, is a reflection of of Grant's work and this whole idea of this, you know, the night side of Eden, the dark side of the tree, and these tunnels where it takes on that. When I first learned about that, and actually I was attending a, I was just a watcher. Okay. I wasn't doing anything, but I would attend these, the secret mystery school in VR chat. And I first saw the 3D tree of life in that, because they have, so it's a, the entire school is laid, it's laid out like the tree where it's like, you know, the top one and it goes down. It's literally the whole thing. If you zoom out of the map, it's all laid out like the tree. And at the very end of it, they have a, I think it's a Golden Dawn altar. So they have an entire virtual altar that people go in there and they do rituals and everything. And they have the, they have that coffin where you go in and it's got the different hues and it's got the INRI and like some weird, like bizarre, I'm sure, you know, if you were to see it, what I'm talking about. But again, that's, I think that was either Golden or whatever, the checkered floor with the two pillars, the chalice and the dagger, and people go in there and they do that. And the first time I ever saw that, that 3D tree of life was in there. And when I started researching, I was like, this makes a whole lot of sense, like that there would be an inversion of that. And of course, so these things that are in there and these tunnels roaming around are able to peer their head in every now and again. Do you have any insight on that? Because I know you've looked into this for the last 10 years at least.
So they, there's definitely, so the way I look at the tunnels is that it's the unmanifest, right? So we're living on the, you know, we're living, I have to bounce back and forth with my Advaita kind of understanding of things with, you know, the general understanding. But the way I look at the tunnels is that it's the unmanifest reality, right? It's the things, it's the place where everything could be, but it's not, or not yet. You know, but it's the potential of everything that could be, right? And it's not necessarily the dark and the, and all of the, you know, fluffy things people like to equate it to. Of course, it is connected to that, you know. But essentially, it's just things that, repressed, or it's the kind of consciousness that we don't really understand. It's beyond our understanding. It's the, you know, if we look at the tree of life with the, as the body mind complex, this is the unconscious. This is the dream world. This is the stuff that, like, you know, creates nightmares. You know, when we're asleep, it's this unknown, that we can't really identify, and we can't. And when we try to, that's when things, become harmful, because it's not supposed to be a thing yet. It's just all trying to be. It's basically where existence comes into what we call existence, prior to that. And if when things can invade into your psyche, people can get, you know, they can get a wild idea, you know, where'd that come from? You know, why did I start thinking about this awful stuff? Why did I start thinking about that over there? You know, they invade that way. Now, it can materialize into, like, I guess you could, in like a 3D form in our own world reality, as, you know, a UFO or a cryptid or a ghost or that sort of thing. The way I kind of look at ghosts is that I feel though as though the energy is manifesting itself in you and you're projecting it outward onto the thing. Like, it doesn't exist in and of itself. It's you're causing the exist. Cause the only thing in my Advaita's background, the only thing that exists is consciousness. Consciousness precedes everything else. That means it precedes the mind. It precedes the body, and the body and the mind aren't real. And neither is the world that we've created. So that has to exist through me or through somebody else. If you really want like a comprehensive, I think really kind of the best thing I could give you as far as a guide as to what each tunnel or each, you know, cell of the, I guess what they call the Klepoth or the tunnels of Set is, if you read the book on her tarot, I'm going to butcher her name. It's Linda Lafario or Filario. It's one of those. I always get it tongue twisted. They make fun of me for it, but, she has a book and in each, I guess you could call it the ruler of the tunnel. They each have like a specific entity. Like I know the fool is the Amprodius, and, she goes into detail and it's in Night Side of Eden. It's just kind of like hard to like piece it all together, but she's kind of pieced it all together in a nice kind of four paragraph kind of deal for each one about the type of like negativity that exists within the tunnel, like specifically to whatever it would be in the day side of the tree, and how you can balance that out. It's just essentially a way of balancing that out.
How do you spell this lady's name? What's the name of the book?
Hang on, give me just a second.
Oh, I see it. Filario.
Filario.
Linda, yeah. Filario.
Night Side Tarot. Yeah.
Yeah, cause yeah, I did read the book that you're talking about, and it's pretty confusing. That was Grant, the Night Side. He breaks it down towards the end of it, but it's, and that's the thing about Grant's work, that it's so jam-packed with information that you can't just speed read through it. You literally have to read a few pages at a time, put it down, digest it, pick it back up, and just do that sort of thing, because you're not, and every, like, I'll be on the second page, you know, I'll crack open a Grant whatever, and I'll be on the second page, and it's just dropping bombs, bro, from the first two paragraphs or whatever. It's like, damn, dude. So, all right, so we have Universe B, Tunnels of Set, and it's making me think of, you ever heard about the Mundus Imaginalis? It's Henry Corbin. He was a contemporary of Carl Jung, and it was, and again, these guys are taking a lot of occult concepts and turning it into their scholarly work, like, oh, this is, but what you're explaining is, you know, this intermediary world from which everything comes forth. Well, the Mundus Imaginalis is just that. It's this intermediary world that is autonomous. It's got its own atmosphere. Everything is there. And sometimes things come forth. They express it as gushing forth from the imagination. So it's like what the real and unreal is all at the same time. And again, we could say this is where angels come from, demons come from, whatever it is, daemons, because kind of sort of two in one. But yeah, it's just making me think about that.
Yeah, I and there's just layers and layers and layers of this. I think Sri Ramana Maharshi said everything that is spiritual, and so, and if everything's consciousness, then everything's spiritual. Like this whole, everything that we can possibly perceive, even as the most mundane thing, is spiritual. It is consciousness. So it's like we created the existence. You know, it's the play of Maya. It's the play of the goddess. This intermediary world is not intermediary. It exists right here. And that's why when everybody gets hip to aliens and stuff, and it's just like, when do you think, you know, we'll make contact? When do you think people are going to wake up to this sort of thing? And it's just like, they're here and now. It's already happening, you know? Just like people talk about enlightenment. It's like, you're already enlightened. You already are the self, you know? It's just, you have to realize it. And these, just like these entities are already here, you just have to realize it. You've already made contact in some sort of way. You've had a dream. You've had weird creatures invade your consciousness in your sleep, or your awareness in your sleep. People have already done this, whether they like it or not.
So let's get into LAM, because LAM is something that has interested me for a while.
Sure.
And this concept of communing with aliens, entities, Nephilim, whatever you want to call them, these things that have, that exist, you're saying that we've made contact. I believe that. And there are people who will fail to admit that won't admit, right, that they're against it, that there is much more to reality than meets the eye, right? There's a reason, in my opinion, depending where you stand, if history is real or not, that this is all, there are reoccurring patterns throughout history with mythology and with gods and goddesses, et cetera. Like all this, there's something more to it. Now, could it be fan fiction? Sure. But I think there is outside influence that is, how you're saying, tapping into people's dreams or whatever it may be. And speaking of dreams, you know, you have H.P. Lovecraft, where he was being talked to in his dreams, essentially. And another one that I brought up yesterday on a podcast, H.R. Geiger, you know, the guy that designed the Xenomorph, where he was also, again, another one of those visionary artist kind of guys that was having these night terrors, and he was painting what he was observing in this altered state of consciousness. And it's very grotesque, very alien, if you will, like everything that he was painting, because essentially it's like a steam, it's almost like a steampunk kind of weird futuristic. It's like that technology that you see that looks organic, but it's tech. You know those movies where they go up to the control board of the alien ship and they're like, what the hell is this? And they have to plug in some weird, you know, thing that looks like a Cthulhu tentacle. And there's a game that I saw recently.
Scorn.
Is it Scorn? Let me look it up here. Scorn.
I bet it's Scorn.
Let's see here. It's Scorn. Yeah, bro. Have you played that?
Yes, I have. Yeah. I was like, this is very otherworldly. I was like, I love this. I play a lot of HP Lovecraft games. There's quite a few of them, like the Alien Cube. That's a good one.
Alien Cube. I'm gonna have to get you on to stream with me a game or two, because I'm trying to do some playthrough decodes, you know, as you know, with the occult symbolism in these movies, in these games and movies. So yeah. Alien Cube is a Lovecraftian horror adventure where you play the role of Arthur, a solitary man whose life is about to change dramatically. Bro, is this game about you, dude?
I mean, I wish, or not wish. I don't know. I haven't really played it yet. I probably don't want to be in that game. But yeah, it's essentially like this cube that falls from the sky, you know, and then people come after him for it. That's about as far as I've gotten.
Whoa, dude. Wait, hold on. What year was this game made in? 21. Hold on. Sounds a lot like my comic book. And
consume.
I don't know when the hell did I make this. This was, I don't even know what year this was. This I'm gonna have to find out. Anyways,
I just got somebody in trouble.
No, you didn't. I mean, I'm just, it's interesting that we're all sharing this line of thought, because essentially that's what. That's what happens in my comic. That's an Abraxas Prime cube relic that fell from the sky that has the cube that gives us our powers.
Very nice.
So this
there
was
you go, no?
Initial release date, October 14, 2021. Let me see when I sold. I don't even know when I would be able to look. Chosen One issue number one.
See, LOM has a lot to do with synchronicities too. And that's where you get a lot of this stuff. I've had a lot of us cats that work with LOM all experience synchronicities, and that's kind of a really telling sign that you're getting into that world, right?
That's interesting, right? When I first jumped on, your volume was on 93, which is obviously a very prominent number in Thelema.
Yeah.
And all this stuff. Anyways, I'll have to find the receipt to when we came up with this, but this I'll tell you after the show. There's some stuff in this that is also very weird in regards to that. But all right, so we got this alien cube. All right, let's talk about Lamb, because what really got me with the Lamb stuff, I remember Shout out to Dave from the Proto Evangelium. He had done these videos and he was talking about Grant and these guys and how they would meditate upon the image of Lamb, and they would go in to the head of Lamb. And that's where it had stopped for me. Like, it was like, okay, they're able to, I think they say they melt into Lamb. They kind of sort of melt into it. And then Grant was like, yeah, they go into Lamb and board it like a ship. And I think in your article, you talked about how Lamb is a ship of sorts, a vessel, a craft that you're able to navigate and see these other realms.
Yeah. There's a lot of different terminology you can use. Of course, there's a plethora of ways that you could get into the tunnels. Lam's not the only one. And if you read that book, Lam the Way, Sean Woodward goes into, and a lot of his books too, he talks about how there's multiple Lams. It's just essentially they're a doorway, right? And I heard this in a video game recently that I was like, oh, okay. A door that leads from one room to the other exists in both. I was like, that's Lam. You know, it's a bridge.
Repeat that again. So a door that exists.
A door that leads from one room to the other. It exists in both.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a way of bridging contact from one universe to the other. See, Lam exists in our mind and body complex as an image. We can look at that image. We kind of equate it to a thing, the gray aliens, but it's essentially not that. Crowley has his limited, you know, description of what that is, and his Lama, the way, the one who goes. And that's a principal description of the gods of Egypt. You know, they go on their way. And Lam is a gateway, a ship, an entity, whatever you want to call it, that can bridge us as, you know, body-mind complex to the other side, which is the untapped dream world, whatever you want to call it, mob zone. That's essentially what he is. And the reason I called him a misunderstood cosmic superpower was because people don't get hip to the woo-woo of, you know, extraterrestrial entities, other planes of consciousness, you know, the same reason not a lot of people like gematria or whatever have you. Everybody's got their own particular tastes and their own particular BS, as Robert Anton Wilson would call it. But he also talked about reality tunnels and how you're not supposed to, like, you know, just get caught in one reality tunnel. There's a ton out there. And a lot of people equate Grant's work with chaos magic, and I can see where they're coming from with that sort of thing, but it's essentially not chaos magic. It's just that the realms in which you're going is untapped, uncharted. You can't quantify it. You can't identify it. You can't, you know, really put your own consciousness in there. You're not supposed to take the thing, the where you get error and things that go wrong, which of course you can't always control that. You know, we always think ourselves as the controller or the doer, and we're not. Everything kind of happens through us. But a lot of people take their everyday waking up reality and they think that they can go in there and identify all these things and bring them back with them and make something out of it. But it doesn't really work that way. The best thing we could do is to use it to create art, or, you know, like you were talking about with H.R. Giger, like a lot of that stuff is like completely unfamiliar to anybody who hasn't seen that stuff, you know, before. And when people look at that, it's like, it's scary because that's everything that we can't identify, the things that we don't know. That's the fear of the unknown. That's literally all that is that we can't identify it. We can't quantify it. We can't relate to it on some, you know, mundane, realistic plain, so we automatically assume that it's evil or it's bad or, you know, it's going to hurt us or I don't understand it. So it's not correct. It can't be real if it can't quantify it something in the real world. And so Austin Spare, H.R. Giger, Salvador Dali, a lot of poets, all these, you know, different visionary artists are tapping into that reality without really knowing it. And so is H.P. Lovecraft. You know, he's like, I dreamed all this stuff. I don't think any of it's real. It's all BS. It's just stories. But Grant saw it for what it was because he understands the dream world via his tantric work and his Advaitist background. And I think that's where the H.P. Lovecraft stuff sort of ties into Grant's work. It's not so much, a lot of people get onto the H.P. Lovecraft thing, but I think it's a little overdone. I love H.P. Lovecraft. You know, I love those entities. I am a passive member of the Esoteric Order of Dagon. So I've worked with Lovecraftian entities like anybody else would work with, you know, Hermes or, you know, Horus or any of these cats, you know. But with Grant talking about the H.P. Lovecraft, it's a little, a lot of people that I've talked to, they're really big detractors of Grant. A lot of people that like to ruffle my feathers and, you know, try to get under my skin with it is, you know, it's like, oh, he thought these entities were real. And I was like, it's not essentially that. He understands that all of existence is not real. So these creatures are no more real than we are. You know, it's just, they're images, symbols for a thing. And he's trying to apply those entities, just like you would an angel or a demon, to a certain location. And in this case, it happened to be the Tree of Life. And that's where he got it in Hecate's Fountain. In Hecate's Fountain, he's got a Tree of Life. He's got all the Lovecraftian entities on there. And it's like how you could possibly set it up if you chose to, you know. But what he was really trying to tap into and try to teach people about was that dream world, that world, that universe B, that tunnels of Set, where these entities were essentially coming from, and how by doing atavistic resurgence or the type of magic that he was talking about and A.O. Spare was talking about, is how you could bring those dream realities that you could possibly be dreaming of, right? So we have our own entities that we could bring about. And that's when I get into a lot of conversations with people and they don't like to hear me talk about this, but a lot of people aren't ready for this conversation, but a good brother of mine sat me down one day and we were talking and he goes, it's all made up. And I was like, what do you mean? And a lot of people get like offended by that. They're just like, what do you mean it's all made up? And essentially, and people think that I'm talking that what they're doing is meaningless. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that if it exists, somebody had to perceive it. Somebody had to write those grimoires down. Somebody created that God. Somebody created that entity. It doesn't exist in a vacuum. Somebody had to perceive it to understand it. These things precede human consciousness. There are consciousness, but like awareness.
So what are your thoughts on God? Like, what do you, in your opinion, what is God? Because, and does God have many facets? Is he multifaceted? Just how there is one lamb, there's other, because, you know, there's a lot of Lovecraftian entities. And that's the thing about chaos magic, where you're able to substitute things for your system. Well, so chaos magic, it's comprehension beyond your understanding, or it's organization beyond comprehension, and you're able to, you throw everything out and you just do the magic. You know, it's all about intention and intent. But what are your thoughts on God? Is it a force? Is there many gods? Is there?
So I'm Advaitist. So a God to me is consciousness. And it's not consciousness as a Westerner would understand it. There's a difference. If you want to know what I'm talking about, you could research Satchitananda, being consciousness and bliss. And in that, what they're talking about particularly Hindu terminology, consciousness is not kind of, in Western culture, we would probably call awareness. You know, it's not the
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Same thing. Consciousness is it's undefinable. And that's the thing with duality and non-duality. We can't really talk about non-duality, because if we talk about non-duality, we've essentially created duality out of it. God to me is the ineffable. We talk about the ineffable in the OTO. We talk about it in, in mass. It's the undefinable reality that precedes everything else. Now, consciousness spreads. We have different forms of God, right? And it's not like there's a tier system where they all get together and they talk, and we know that the bearded man at the top is the supreme or whatever. It's just that I kind of look at it how there's an image of, I think Krishna or one of them is asleep, and he's got all these bubbles around him, and each one has a different like reality inside of it. Right. And then like, that's what we're talking about when we're talking about reaching higher planes of consciousness. It's like, it's already in us. You know, we are like, I'm not Arthur. I am in reality consciousness. But we have a body to experience non-duality, so we come to the realization of the ultimate reality, which is consciousness.
I've called this cosmic fleshlights before, essentially, because, you know, some people say that God experiences reality through us. So we're being used to experience reality.
I wouldn't say used so much. It makes it seem like, you know, unimportant, but, you know, the body essentially is that. It's not as detrimental. It's not as important as we try to give it credit to. Like, as individual bodies, that's not God, right? But everything is consciousness, because it precedes everything. But the mind has created this illusion that it exists in a world of duality, like I am separate from that. I am separate from you. I'm separate from this couch, you know, but essentially we're all one thing. We identify these different entities and realities as separate out of merely convenience, that way, cause we quantify those things that way. But in reality, you know, at the end of it all, it's all essentially consciousness, which is no thing.
And that's why, to me, the Gnostics, that's when I first started doing research, it all went to the Gnostics with me. And I think that is something that they got right, you know, because they talk about consciousness, the thinking father came first before anything else. And yeah, let me share this real quick, because you caught my attention with this the Tree of Life with the Lovecraftian entities on it. So you have Yagoth here, Yog-Sothoth, Set. I'd never seen this.
Yeah. So when you hear the term, because you're going to hear it a lot with Berdio stuff, when we're talking Trans-Yugothian.
Yeah, I've heard that before.
Essentially, Trans-Plutonic. It's just what's beyond Pluto. See, if we're thinking this is the body-mind complex, and the planets fall, you know, of our solar system fall within those spheres. When we're talking about trans-Plutonic energies, trans-Yugothian energies, we're essentially talking about what is beyond our solar system, things beyond our awareness, our present awareness that we could actually quantify within this system here. And in the traditional Tree of Life, you have the outer, right? You have the Ein Sof, the Ein Sofar, the Ein, which is like, you know, infinite light, infinite nothing, and then not, you know. And there's really essentially no way for a living person to go beyond that. But we can through Doth, which is the false Sephira. And that's where, that's the realm of Lom. That's where we enter the tunnels of Set. Grant goes into that night side of Eden, of course.
What do you have to say to the people who don't believe in space, bro? Because you're bringing up space terms, and some people don't believe in space. But I think that space isn't what we've been told, and it's more like how we're being shown here by Grant, and that's a reason why they haven't gotten rid of it, in my opinion, because it has to do with the occult. I mean, here is obviously a spatial, heavily space-themed occult system that literally uses these entities that are cosmic in nature, interdimensional, and it's really, I mean, it's all cosmicism, right? It's what's out there, and that there are things that are way past our comprehension, because and one thing I learned from Grant is that they look bad to us because we're in the wrong state of consciousness to be able to comprehend these entities. And that's why they seem grotesque to us in this state.
Well, what we understand as comprehension is just as that awareness that I was mentioning earlier. And awareness is, does not precede consciousness. Consciousness precedes everything. So everything's consciousness. And space is no more real than we are, you know. And when we think about the ultimate reality, you know, that is as illusory as anything else. The only reason that we don't understand it as much is because we don't spend time there. You know, we spend time in our living rooms and at the beach and at our jobs and, you know, at the bar or something. We understand the world because we experience it day to day. That's the things that we can easily identify, you know. But when it starts to get dark or unfamiliar, all of a sudden that sense of unfamiliarity hits you and it begets fear. And that's a product of the tunnels of Set. It's an unfamiliar territory of certain consciousness and awareness that we're not familiar with. And so, and it invades the real world, because once you found yourself in that territory, all of a sudden you're hit with fear. Where'd that fear come from? Why are you fear? Who is fearful? You know what I mean? The Advaitists would talk about, you know, who's I? Who's this I you keep talking about? You know, who did that thought come from? You know, that's when it comes to space, it's an unfamiliar territory. So people don't understand it. People fear it. People don't start coming up with all kinds of different things about it. It happened before in this, with these medieval grimoires. We had angels and demons. Who are they? We don't know. Well, what are these lights in the sky? We don't know. We'll just cut. Well, it's the seraphim, you know, and they're applied this way. And if you're looking at that tree of life, you know, it's an easily quantifiable thing. There's a reason for that, because they wanted a place where they could catalog each of these different things that are ascribed to a certain thing and have it work off of each other. You know, in reality, the tunnels of Set are no more clear cut as that tree. Like, they're all over the place. It's unquantifiable. You can't possibly map it. It's just that that's a convenient way of mapping certain non-realities at this point, and Proteus and all these other klepothic entities, and putting them somewhere where you can easily say, well, I did that tunnel, or I went there. But in reality, it's not as clear cut as they made it seem in like medieval grimoires, where you're like conjuring up a certain spirit. Well, and then I'll put it through this test, and it's going to teach me about this thing because it's from this planet and this, that, and the other. All these correspondences just trying to, you know, flood in your awareness and trying to, you know, write it all down willy-nilly. When you're exploring the tunnels of Set and you're doing long workings and stuff like that, it's not going to happen at once. That stuff can happen years down the road. That's why in the Typhonian Order they have you keep a record, because you may need to flip back a few journal pages and figure out that this thing that happened years ago is happening now, or it's coming back now. It's this energy is invading this plane of existence again, and you have to be ready for that, or you're going to miss it, and then it just becomes unknown phenomena again.
Can you walk us through what it's like to do, what would you call a lamb working or something, or what's it called when you meditate upon lamb? And
I just call it my lamb work. It's not really something that it's like kind of nailed down. A lot of people get like hooked on terminology and stuff like this, but if like you're working with lamb, you're doing a lamb working, or you can call it whatever you want. You can call it your Friday night, you know. I just call it my lawn working. What I do is I'm sort of new to this sort of thing. I know people who go and do a lot of other things, but essentially what I do is I banish the room, get all that negative energy out. You know, I just want to be clear headed. And then I sit down and I meditate on lawn with, you know, with a short mantra. I think it's in the lawn statements to lawn a lot, Ipsos, which Ipsos is the word of the Aeon Amat. So you're essentially calling that future aeon, that unknown reality, you know, that could be congruent with the current aeon. I'm not going to argue that with a lot of people like to argue about that whole succession of aeon stuff, but it's not really my gig.
Talking about a cod and the aeon, yeah. Amat. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I generally don't care. I'll work with whatever. I'm eclectic that way. I don't really, none of that's my fight. I just do the thing, and
yeah,
what I get is what I get. So I mantra out with sometimes I do the Lam Serpent Sadhana, which is it's a form of Kundalini magic where you imagine Lam as the Kundalini serpent, and you work your chakras up until you get to the crown chakra, and it's kind of open you up into a, you know, higher form of consciousness. Sometimes I do that, sometimes I don't. And I just essentially stare at the image of Lam and project my consciousness. So everything that's like me, right? I take it and I put it into Lam. That way I'm like protected. Essentially, you're like, if you're going to like a, you know, under the ocean, you would want to be like in a submarine, right? You don't want to just go diving down there, because eventually you're going to drown or the pressure's going to kill you. So
not on Ocean Gate submersible, but yeah,
but no, not on one of those. Definitely don't go on one of those. You know, if your submarine has a PlayStation 2 controller, don't go. But I go in there and I view out of Lam's eyes, and essentially it's to me a form of visualization magic, which not all of it's going to take place visually, right? There's so many more things you could do. Like I'm preparing to go into an amount of work where I do lawn work, and then I'm going to go paint, or I'm going to go write something down and try to see if like some automatic writing comes through, or if something like I paint, kind of, if I just paint willy nilly, well, what happens what does that look like now? Maybe I can quantify it, maybe, or maybe it'll lead me down another path of working. You know what I'm saying? But essentially I treat it like a visualization magic. Like, what am I seeing? What am I in? What is my awareness taking in from this? Like, I don't want to bring any of my personal stuff and then bring it in there and act like I'm going to meet some alien entity that's going to then tell me how I can fix that sort of thing. That's definitely not what you want to do, because nothing there is really existent. It doesn't know what you are. It doesn't know what the world is or what reality you're speaking of. You know, what is Earth? Who are you? You know, so don't bring your personal issues or your personal plights into that sort of realm. You basically just want to go there, experience it. That's all about, with Typhoon in Order, it's all about experience. You're not really, it's all about your magic, making it your way, your own experience, right? Because to have something or to not have something is duality. We're not working with duality. We're working with non-duality. Everything's about experience. So you're wanting to experience everything that's in those tunnels and then bring it back in some form, either through artwork or a feeling, or, you know, maybe it's something in a dream. You know, it's never going to be as clear cut as people want to make it. I think that's why a lot of people, you know, really don't like this type of stuff, is because they want something they can hold and touch. And, you know, if you're a talisman creator, something you could sell, but, you know, it's not like that. It's all about experience and what you can get, what you take from it as spiritually, not as like physically.
Have you, so that's a question that I get a lot, like, well, not a lot, but I've gotten the question before frequently, where it's like, what can I do to summon a little imp looking thing in front of me? Do I have to do the hokey pokey, turn myself around, do three backflips, you know, and spit to the east, and blink five times, and boom, is it gonna happen? And it's like, I tell people that, I've always said, I was like, it's not that simple. It's much more complicated than that.
You really have to be up on your yogic and visionary techniques. There's a lot of like subtle things, even in that Lam statement. It's very short, but what he's describing is very involved. And this is where I can get into sort of like my real background. Like, a lot of my background is in spirit evocation. And I studied a lot of Solomonic texts, which they're all the same. I talk about this in that article. And then I went back to the PGM, which is like the earliest recorded document we could actually, like, we have as a people to That's actually Skinner, draw right? from.
Skinner has done a lot of work on that.
He did a book on it, but so is a lot of other people. It's literally in pieces. It's just a bunch of papyri in pieces. And there's a guy named Hans Dieter Beetz. He died before he made a volume two. But there's volume one called The Greek Magical Papyri, and he lists every, like, they're all numbered with like catalog numbers, and they all involve different rituals and whatever. Crowley got his Liber Samech, his Bornless ritual, from a document in there called the Stele of Zhu. It's literally almost word for word called the Headless One ritual. He got that from the PGM. When it comes to spirit evocation, a lot of people, you have these purists, right? You have these traditionalists that they get hit to a text. It has all these specifics, like everything you got to do. Oh, you got to cut the wood, make your wand. You got to cut it off this tree on a Wednesday, and you got to like bless it on a Tuesday. And, you know, you got to make sure the moon's in some house, you know, and that's just a lot of fluff. It's, these entities exist without your say so. It's has more to do with your attraction to them and their attraction to you rather than what color your talisman is that you've made, right? I tried to stay as close as possible to the text when it came to that sort of thing. I have, you know, silver talismans and copper talismans and all this other stuff. I have a robe, I have a circle, I have a wand, I have a table, I have a globe, you know, all this stuff. But, and a lot of people get mad at me for this, but you don't need it. You know what I mean? You can evoke with words alone. In the PGM, they did it. They were using Greek vowels, and that's all they used. They went out there and they just said, ah, you, oh, ah, wah, wah. And then eventually something showed up. You know, it's not about having the most material objects in a room that you've consecrated to magic. I mean, it helps. You're obviously going to, it's going to put your mind in the right space, as opposed to, you know, sitting in your sunroom with, you know, music blaring and your phone going off and your laptop playing something off of YouTube or whatever. You're definitely going to get to a better headspace with the stuff that they're talking about. But a lot of that, and I, with these old grimoires, a lot of them were trying to sell you something. A lot of them were like, I'm the wizard, you're the peasant, and here's how you do magic. You need all this stuff. If you don't have all this stuff, it's not going to work. If you don't read my book, it's not going to work. You know,
my homunculi are good, not yours.
You know, it's a lot of that stuff. It's very clear in some grimoires where they're just like, you know, you'll win a horse race if you do this ritual or whatever. I can teach it to you. You can win those horse races, you know, or you can make those women dance for you, you know, if you use that spell from my book. Mm-hmm. You know, it ain't going to work if you don't do this, and I'll teach you how, because I'm the wizard, you know. So a lot of that is like almost like petty salesman magic, you know what I mean? But in that, it lies the deeper understanding that if you do a certain thing a certain way, certain results will follow. And Krolik said that almost, I think, verbatim from the way I just said it. Or I just said it verbatim. It's a lot simpler than people make it out to be. It's a lot more complicated than some people make it out to be. It requires a certain level of seriousness. It requires a certain level of not so seriousness, you know. You just want to be genuine with what you're doing. If you make something with the intent that's what that thing is going to do, it will do it, you know. A lot of people get this feeling. I've had people message me for years now that's like, oh, can you please do this thing for me? Can you please write this down for me? Can you please write this liturgy for me? Can you please make this wand for me? Can you make a talisman that'll do a thing for me? I was like, why don't you do it? You know what I mean? All these people get into this mentality that like you have to be born a witch or you have to be born a wizard. You don't have to be born nothing. Like nobody's consciousness precedes everything, right? You are that thing already. You don't have to be initiated. You don't have to do this. No one's going to sell you the right magic that's going to work 100% for you. It has to come from you. It has to come from within, and it has to, the only thing that matters, the way I see it, the way I've always worked, is it has to be genuine from you. Open up that Anahata chakra, that heart chakra, put that intent there, and that thing will work, whatever it is. It may not always work 100%. That's the nature of the beast. You know what I mean? This is science. This is not, you know, it's not a set in book thing. It's not a written in stone has to be done this way. It's nothing is ever that easy. Nothing. The world doesn't work that way.
Do you know anything about the rites of the mummy, the Krilla cell workings? Have you ever heard about that?
The Krilla cell or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
It sounds familiar. I know I've read it somewhere, but I couldn't tell you a thing about it, I don't think.
Yeah, it's Lavenda, and it's about this guy that did these rituals in 1984, I think it was, where he went into the tunnels of Set, and I guess these entities ran a train on him and impregnated him. And he was impregnated with this, what I've termed numerical parasite. And allegedly, according to who was it that I knew? It wasn't Staley. It was somebody else I was talking to about it. It might have been Staley, actually. Yeah, it might have been Staley. Apparently, the math checks out. And he alleges that in the book of the law, it's actually a secret cipher, a mathematical cipher that Crowley or whoever put in there, and it's this crazy thing that goes back to the pi ratio or phi ratio, and essentially that ratio you're able to then decipher other realities, and that every single different god was a different ratio essentially, and that's what they were trying to portray, and that you're able to, you know, tune into those ratios and tap into that god or something like that. And I think Lavenda says it checked out. I mean, But this guy was doing some weird stuff. I mean, he was trying to induce an abduction. So he was trying to get abducted, have the abduction experience to cross over to the other side. You know, to go and get projected into the tunnels of Set, where he was able to bring back some information, which, I mean, have you working with these entities or whatever this is, this force, have you been able to extract any practical knowledge or information from your workings? Because it seems like, you know, you're able to tap into these other realms, but what good is it? You know, what's the point of it if you can't bring anything out of it? You know?
Well, the point is experience. We want to reach higher states of consciousness, essentially, is what the aim is. We want to not so much bring back these sort of things. I think the Typhonian Order is quite opposed to invasive forces coming from that realm entering Dayside consciousness, and we really want to try to fight that as much as possible. I know, I think at least in one of Berdio's orders, they talk about trying to fight cosmic or otherworldly, like, evils, or, you know, just negative forces that are trying to invade in Dayside consciousness, as, you know, people going crazy or people murdering people, you know, like, what are these people thinking? This could be parasites from this, from this other universe that's invading in our Dayside reality and causing them to do this thing. I'm not trying to take blame away from people. You know, they're obviously, you know, shouldn't do that sort of thing.
I believe it, dude. I believe it.
But this, people have been trying to figure out that code in the Book of the Law since time immemorial, you know, and, you know, people have figured it out. People have not figured it out. And in, I think some of that is where you get the New English, the New Aeon English Kabbalah, and where Frederick Codd was getting, you know, like the key to the Book of the Law and that sort of thing. So that number is very important to, especially people that, you know, are really interested in unknown territory, right? Stuff that seems ridiculous or something that seems like it means nothing. They really want to try to figure that stuff out. And I've not done any work with that code in the Book of the Law at all. I've studied the Book of the Law. I've got a plethora of them. But when it comes to parasitic entities, yes, absolutely. I mean, people get haunted. That's where that's why that stuff happens. It's why people, like, are possessed, you know, that, you know, these things are invading the mind, right? They precede the mind. You know, the mind is non-existent. So those things can enter your body, quote unquote, your reality, quote unquote, and essentially take over. This stuff can happen. Grant goes into it. He's got pretty much a tale at the end of each chapter about what went wrong at the, I guess it was New Isis Lodge. It could have been somewhere else. But of these negative things that were happening as a result of bad magic, essentially, and I have no reason not to believe anything that he's saying in that book. I've had negative things happen, but I've also had really good things happen. With the Tunnels of Set, it's a little bit more psychological than that, I would say, as far as, like, what you can benefit from, if there is such a thing, is, and Linda Florio goes into that with, you know, the negative aspects of each tunnel. I think one of them's like impotency or like sexual overages, you know, like if you're feeling like you're getting, your sexuality is like pervasive and it's like taking over your mind and it's becoming unhealthy. It's like this tunnel, right? It's the entities from this tunnel that are influencing Dayside consciousness. You need to work with that tunnel and get those off your back. You know what I mean? But when it comes to, like, spirit evocation and that sort of thing, like, I wholly believe in talismans and imbuing them with a certain energy to then, if I wear that certain thing, certain things will take place. And I've been working with a demon, you know, that's what they're generally called. I just call them chthonic entities, just the subterranean entities.
Oh, just a fucking demon, you know, just.
Yeah, sure. I mean, whatever, but I have a talisman I've worn for years. I don't know if you can see that too well, but I've made it myself. And, he teaches fighting and defense and how to take take care of yourself. And I have the rulers that I called upon to then call him up because they're hierarchical. So I have Lucifer and Sagat on there, and then that's him on the front.
And what's that a tattoo of in your forehead, bro?
Oh, this is a Talaka. It's a, in Hinduism, they have like a third eye. They usually do it for celebrations or special events, that sort of thing. I call this one my Typhonian Talaka. They vary regionally. Like if you look up Talaka there and like images or like a Google search it, they have like different ones for different regions of India. And they're all over the place. Like they have ones that are really simple and they have ones that are complicated. But there's a guy named Edgar Kerval. He runs Sirius Limited Esoterica, books with all the, all the sonic stuff, all the vampire and all the dark side stuff. He runs that book publisher. He has something sort of like this. And I said, man, I would really like to get one of those, especially since I got into Advaita and doing the tantric stuff. I started thinking about, well, what would mine look like? And I put this together and you could, there's like the three pitchforks, which, Shiva, but it's also, if you look at, what was supposed to be New Isis's Lodge's, symbol, it was like a circle and a cross with the three up top. So it was something like that. I have this kind of like egg shape in the middle here, which was supposed to represent Lom. And then of course the crescent moon with the dot, and I've got three dots for Satchitananda. And then a downward triangle because of the goddess, So it's just this, it's an amalgamation of different symbols that were kind of really important to me. And I thought I was just going to get that tattoo. I got tattoos everywhere. I got a tattoo of Lom on my back.
Seriously?
Yeah.
So you said that you work with demons. So how does that go? I mean, aren't you afraid of something? Again, one of these parasitic possessions? Have you been possessed by something where it's led to, you said you've had negative things happen to you? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So, no, I'm not afraid of working with demons. They're essentially not as scary as people would make them out to be. I mean, of course, there are entities you don't really want to work with. And it really just comes on a case by case basis, right? It's just like people, there's certain people you don't really want to hang out with, because it's, you've had negative experiences with them. They don't vibe with you, before Advaita, before getting into the grant stuff, I really kind of just said that my excuse was I'm the magician. If I can't work with these spirits, what can I do? What powers do I possess if I don't have authority over this spiritual realm that doesn't really have the same level of existence that I do, right? I have the authority. I can do magic. They cannot. The power lies within. Nowadays, I just understand that, I am the realized being. I am consciousness. Essentially, we're no different than they are. It's not so much what Crowley was talking about with the like psychological thing of they're like parts of my mind. I don't believe in that. It kind of goes back to the, whether you work with the spirit model or the psychological model. I tend to kind of like work in between the two as it suits me, but more so of the spirit model. Like they are entities that exist, but essentially I'm an entity that exists too. Exists, quote unquote, and it's essentially just a part of myself that I'm calling upon, and whether that is an angel that we assign to a certain planet, they don't exist there. The planet is just a rock like this one is, and in these medieval texts, these demons were said to reside under the earth because that's where they thought hell was under the earth. The way I look at it is I call them terrestrial or non-terrestrial spirits. They're up here or they're down there. It's just a matter of territory. It's not a matter of like evil versus good. There is essentially no such thing. That's duality again. So we're trying to like work with non-duality, then those spirits are no different than the others. They're all spirit. It's just a matter of, can I work with that one versus that one? will that one do what I say it, what I expect it to do? And then if it doesn't, you banish it by magic. And I can, honestly say by being, you know, having that realization and recognizing your own authority, whatever that means, that, you know, you shouldn't have much trouble from those spirits, especially if you're standing within a circle that you've consecrated to a certain purpose of keeping that thing away from me if it means me harm, then you shouldn't have any issues. It's just that when you go into it willy-nilly, you're disingenuous, you just want gold. You know, it's the classic tale of, you know, a bad guy wants to go get treasure and he'll do anything to do to get it.
Hubris,
that,
you know.
Right. And what happens to them in the movie, you know what I mean? So it's just that you have to understand, you have to respect. I mean, it's like electricity. If you don't know anything about it, you got to respect it, you know, or you're going to get bit.
What do you have to say for, so this is all very tempting for people, right? The idea of working with forces outside of space and time, outside of reality, how you're saying terrestrial and non-terrestrial, because I think you have the CE5s, those are the people that call forth the UFOs and all that stuff. I mean, they're essentially manifesting these UFOs. What do you have to say to people like the Order of the Nine Angles, where they go to the darkest depths and really crank it up to 10, doing everything that you could possibly imagine and some, where they take it to the, because I mean, I know you're saying there's no duality, but if this entity is going to drive me insane, being insane isn't a good thing, in my opinion, right? Like, that says it's not a good thing. So I would associate that with evil. You know what I mean? Like, that to me, somebody would be like, damn, that's pretty evil that entity is able to make your eyes explode or something like that. Like, that's not a good thing. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But what do you have to say as far as those kind of guys where they really lean into the darker aspect of the occult? Are they on their own mission, or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, they are on their own mission. There's a quote by Maharaj Nisargadatta. I think he's talking to one of his disciples, and he said something. Let me see if I can find it. Basically, what I have to say to people is, if you look hard enough for something, you're going to find it. And that's it. If whatever you're looking for, you're going to find it. And be prepared for what you find. Because it may be something that you expect, and it's totally something you're not going to expect. And I have the quote here. Question: how can you be so sure of yourself? How do you know that what you say is true? Maharaj says, it's not of myself that I am sure. I am sure of you. All you need is to stop searching outside what can be found only within. Set your vision right before you operate. You are suffering from acute misapprehension. Clarify your mind, purify your heart, sanctify your life. This is the quickest way to change your world. Question: so many saints and mystics lived and died. They did not change my world. Maharaj says, how could they? Your world is not theirs, nor is theirs yours. Question: surely there is a factual world common to all. Maharaj says, the world of things, of energy and matter. Even if there were such a common world of things and forces, it is not the world in which we live. Ours is a world of feelings and ideas, of attractions and repulsions, of scales and values, of motives and incentives, a mental world altogether. Biologically, we need very little. Our problems are of a different order. Problems created by desires and fears and wrong ideas can be solved only on the level of the mind. You must conquer your own mind, and for this, you must go beyond it. That's essentially what we as magicians are doing. We're trying to go beyond the mind. The mind is the liar. It's not the self. The self is consciousness. Consciousness is God. We are God. All these things proceed from this. When we try to seek out evil, we'll find evil. Mm-hmm. You know, if that's what you want. you know, I don't recommend it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's something, again, it's in their nature as a person, sort of, if they are leaning into the more evil aspects of the occult. Because, I mean, that is like the redemption through sin sort of concept, where it's like, it doesn't matter, I'm still going to be able to achieve some sort of redemption, and I'm just going to do the give in to the darkness. That's how you're able to even out with the good. You know, there's these guys that have thought about that throughout history, and they're still thinking like that even today.
And is it their nature, or is it some parasitic entity that's invaded their mind that's told them that their path is evil, or that's their path, it's their path to do wrong or to do evil in the world, or that sort of thing? It could be a sickness that's just invaded these people, you know, because our essential nature is consciousness, it's God. It's the concept of duality that really runs amok in everyday life and tells us that it's us versus them, or it's good versus evil, or it's, you know, magicians versus plebeians, you know. It's just nonsense, essentially. And some person's demon could be somebody else's angel. We don't know, you know. I haven't had one angel that's helped me out, and I've worked with everyone from every planet, you know.
Are you sure it was an angel and not a demon?
I mean, the Saturnian angels, they get, you know, they're pretty rough. You know what I mean? Saturn, it's all about telling you the truth. If you want to know the truth, do Saturnian rituals, because they're not going to lie to you. You're going to hate what you're going to find out. And that's how you'll know it works. But Marcosius has never done me wrong. I've been wearing his talisman every day. I have it on every day. I wake up in the morning, I throw that thing on, I throw on my malas, and it protects me every day. I haven't had, you know, my life is quantifiably so much better than it has been in the past after doing magic for these, you know, 10 plus years. There is a benefit to be had in a mundane level doing magic, but essentially what we're after is experience, and experiencing higher states of consciousness beyond the mind, beyond this, what he was talking about in that quote I read earlier about this world that's common to all. It's there's no such thing. You know, the one thing that's common to all is that we are all consciousness, and that these other things are your world. That's your world you've created. That's what you're experiencing because you choose to experience it. If you want to experience things beyond your comprehension, all you have to do is open yourself up to them and they'll come to you.
Damn, dude. Shout out to Marcovius or whatever his name is for being an OG. You're an interesting guy, bro. This is coming directly from somebody who's in the occult, who's doing it. You know, Arthur is sharing his story with us. Listen, dude, I wish you the best of luck in your endeavors and whatever.
You as well.
Else you do. Stay safe, you know. Do you have any closing thoughts that you want to leave the people with? Any precautions that they should take if they want to look into it, or anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
If you want to get into the occult and into magic, the only advice I give is take everybody's advice with a grain of salt. Listen to yourself. Listen to the inner voice. Listen to your intuition. It's going to guide you pretty much the right way almost 100% of the time. You don't have to join an occult order, but it does help. It does help to find community no matter what you're doing. Yeah, stay safe. Be vigilant. Be smart. Do your research. Read books. Books, books, books. You can never have too many. And just take it at your own pace. It's not a race. You don't have, there's no rush. There's no reward at the end of the tunnel. The reward is the realization that you are the self. You are that, you are the thing you want. You're that already. You just have to realize it and just take your time. Don't get yourself in trouble. Don't be trying to start fires and in the woods and all this other stuff and getting yourself into trouble. It doesn't require all that. You can do everything you need to do in the sanctity of your own home. And, yeah, I hope I hope this conversation that we've had today inspires more people to take part in the resurgence of the Typhonian order and then the Kenneth Grant and the Typhonian tradition. I hope people get more into magic. I hope everything that I've said or anything about my story is relatable or helps people on their path if they're just getting started or, you know, whatever. I hope it's helped in some way. And I hope you got a lot of information. I hope you keep interviewing people like me and, or, you know, people not like me, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. I like to have a little bit of everybody on the show, occultist, non-occultist. I don't judge people. I judge people by character. And if I feel you're a good person and you don't, you know, if as long as you don't mess with me or my family, I'm good. And I judge people by character. For those that choose to join an occult order because they want to satisfy that hunger for whatever reason, that's on them. Although I get a lot of emails of people regretting joining orders because it's not what they were promised. And it's like how you said, just read books. Any information that you want to find is in a book. But again, I get it. Sometimes it gets lonely. Sometimes you want that company, that, you know, like-minded people. And if joining an order is good for you, I mean, sure, you know. But
9 times out of 10, an occult order is just going to be an organization that they're selling a product, and that product is whatever holy book they're pitching. You know what I mean? I'm probably going to get a lot of flack for this, but the OTO is, it's essentially just a social club, you know, there with some mysteries thrown in there. And it's the same thing with Masonry and same thing with a lot of orders. It's just a lot of this stuff. That's, I get a lot of out of the Typhonian orders essentially because it's simply there in order to bring you the understanding that your work, the thing that you can do personally, the thing that we can't really tell you what to do, you have to do it yourself. That's the work, right? Mm-hmm. That's why I get a lot out of it, you know, but, you know, the OTO has its place. The Typhonian order has its place. All these different orders have their place. You will learn things. You will not agree with people. You're going to find some really people that you hate in some of these things that are just kind of like, why am I even here? Because this person's here. You just got to look past that, do your own thing. Focus on yourself, focus on your will, focus on your magic, and you're going to be just fine.
Awesome, Walter. I appreciate your time with us here today. This was very insightful. I enjoyed our conversation.
Me too.
And as always, everyone, make sure to check out the show on social media at the 101 podcast, TJOJP.com. All that good stuff. Do you want to plug anything, Arthur, before we get out of here?
I got read Along the Way, the Psychonauts workbook. People can find me on the Instagram under Arthur_Magnus71. I'm on Facebook under Arthur Magnus. Y'all want to have a conversation with me or chew me out for anything that I've said, you're more than welcome to. And yeah, that's about it.
Awesome. Well, as always, everyone, stay safe and see you on the other side. Mike. Thank you.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.